Hey, we're going to take a little break here and talk about Interstate batteries. Now, if you're like me, enjoying the great outdoors, you need gear that is as reliable as it gets. That's why I power my adventures with Interstate batteries. I use Interstate batteries in my boats. I use Interstate batteries in my camper. Great for your truck, too. From Alaska to Montana, they're outrageously dependable. Battery is essential. With over 150,000 dealer locations, finding one is easy. For all your vehicles, land or sea, choose Interstate. Head to interstatebatteries.com and find your power today. Hey, everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right. Join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meat Eater Live, headed back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, camp stove, and campfire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th, the Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25th, the Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27th, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29, the Union in Salt Lake City. April 30, the Egyptian in Boise. May 1, the Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2, the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon. And May 5, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at TheMeatEater.com. Hope to see you at the show.
Clean your gun and tune your bow. We're the Hunting Collective Show. Calling hunters new and old. The Hunting Collective Show. Where facts are facts and opinions are subjective. You're listening now to the Hunting Collective.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the penultimate episode of the Hunting Collective. I am, as always, Ben O'Brien, and I'm joined in studio by Phil T. Engineer. Phil, how are you, sir?
Everybody knows that the penultimate episode
yes.
is usually one of the best
yes.
of a TV show,
You're
like
right.
a series or a
You're
season.
Right. Correct.
We'll see if that's the case here.
You never know.
No.
It could be the best episode ever of this program right
yeah.
now. So strap in. I don't know if you're in a place where there's any straps around, but get one and strap mm-hmm. yourself to wherever you're sitting.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, don't move and lock in because you're about to get regaled with one of the nation's most riveting coming of age tales. And that is the tale of Phil T. Engineer's first turkey hunt. It's going to be, I will say this, I'm not going to say much about what happens other than to say it's a two-parter. There are two parts. This is, of course, the first of two parts. And we will reveal at some point along the way whether Phil killed a turkey or not. But more importantly than that, a few days back I shared a photo of Phil the Engineer on Instagram and Facebook, where he was holding his turkey target. Now, we'll get to what happened, how that turkey target came to be full of tiny little holes. But, Phil, the reaction was broad and it was interesting. And
yeah.
people, you're a hero. You are an inspiration.
That's one word. Yeah, sure.
People love you. Hundreds of comments poured in from across the world, nay, the globe. People love it, man. Somebody said greatest character arc of all time.
Yeah.
Phil is way less of a nerd than I originally anticipated. Still stoked on him, though. Hashtag legend. I've never wanted someone I've never met to shoot a turkey more than I want Phil to shoot a turkey. Good luck. Don't forget the TP. Phil, just in case.
It's a good poop callback.
Yeah, it really
yep.
is. It's a good it's a good call back to the show. A lot of good lucks, a lot of yeah, boys. A lot of people talking about how you looked. What do you think about hundreds of people commenting on your looks as opposed to your voice? Because we did the voice face contest back in the infancy.
Yeah.
Of THC.
I totally understand the fascination because I've had the same experience.
You have.
Yeah. You listen to a radio show or a podcast and you just build up an image of somebody in your head.
Yeah.
And then you actually see them and it's usually disappointing. It's usually like,
this guy says, Phil looks like Steve and Yanni are his dads.
That was a good one. And I see it. I kind of see it.
Phil looks a lot less nerdy than I imagined. That's a compliment.
Sure.
I imagine Phil is some nerdy early 30s chubby ginger with a beard. What do you think about that?
I mean, I'm offended for chubby gingers everywhere on their behalf.
Yeah. I mean, nothing wrong with a chubby ginger.
No.
Support for those folks. So there's a lot of people. This guy says, this is the first picture I've ever seen of Phil. Phil is not the character I draw up in my head. Well, people actually drew you up. And I don't think you look like what they drew. That's the whole point of it.
My favorite comment was something along the lines of, Phil looks less masculine than he sounds, and he doesn't sound very masculine.
This guy said,
I'll take it.
He is like a small infant child, sweet boy.
Yep.
I hope he has fun in his first time out.
So thanks for all those comments.
Yeah, I could go on because there is hundreds of them. People from across the country sent us DMs. They sent us emails to thc@themeater.com wishing you well.
Yeah.
And hoping that you would get a turkey.
Mm-hmm.
So this is by far, other than, I don't know, I think this is by far the biggest thing we've done as a podcast. And that is the last thing we'll ever do. So why not be the biggest? People are into it, Phil. People, they want it. Can you feel the pressure?
I can feel it, but it's surprisingly not weighing on me as much as I thought it would.
No, you were pretty, light as a feather.
I'm kind of brushing it off. Excuse me. I'm kind of brushing it off, but I don't mean that I'm brushing off the compliments as well.
Yeah.
I hear all the compliments, and it's I want to say thank you.
Yeah.
Because I'm glad you're invested in my arc.
In your character arc.
The greatest character arc of all time, which is essentially just, hey, Phil, have you ever gone hunting? Nope. We're going to take you hunting.
Yeah.
And that was the arc, but people love it.
Yeah, well, that's it. If you stretch any small storyline out for 2 years, it seems like an epic tale.
Exactly.
And that's where we are. Now, we got a message from our friend Eric Hall. He had something to say.
I'd like to say something about that rare sighting of Phil T. Engineer on Facebook. That was like a Bigfoot sighting.
Yes.
Very rare.
Very rare. You don't see it often.
By looking at the smile on his face, his number's gone up. So, looking forward to Phil's turkey hunt, the last two shows coming up.
There is.
Kind of a build up to Phil's turkey hunt being the last show.
Yep, that's it. He's right. The man is right.
Yes.
A rare sighting of Phil T. Engineer, like the Bigfoot. A lore of old. Maybe you will, once the show is over, your legend will continue and people will continue to see you in places where you don't exist.
Or maybe I will just retreat to the woods.
Yeah.
And
grow a lot of chest hair.
Exactly.
Grow a beard.
Yeah.
Grow a Skimpy McWeestache and come back. So let's lay out, Phil, what we're going to do here. This is a lot of work to tell this story. And again, as we mentioned, quite the buildup. So, we're going to tell the story in its totality. We're going to lean into a linear tale of one man and another man and a truck and a turkey hunt.
And, yeah, okay. I was going to say, like, and some decoys.
And some decoys. We could just list all the
things, all the
that, things were
there.
That
are in,
yeah.
in your truck.
A cup of coffee.
Uh-huh.
We're going to lean into it, and we're going to tell you the whole story. And we're doing something a little bit different. Phil and I have decided that we're going to play our audio and do some color commentary of what was happening at the time it was happening.
Yeah, we're going to do some live commentary with some probably minimal editing from me. I'm thinking about future me right now.
You're talking
several hours from now when I sit down to edit this podcast. I don't know. I don't think I'm going to do a lot of editing. We're just going to do it kind of on the fly here.
Yep. And if you don't like it, Cancel us.
Ha!
Get rid of us. It doesn't matter. We can do whatever we want at this point. The worst thing could happen has already happened. And so we're pretty much flying by the seat of our pants if we weren't already before. As I've been saying, we kind of building a roller coaster while we're riding it. So this is Phil's first hunt. Hashtag, if you're going to post about this online, hashtag Phil's first bird.
Okay. Is that the final hashtag
that's
you landed on?
That's the final hashtag I landed on. Phil's first bird.
Okay. Because I think you've gone through several at this point.
Have you seen the video that I took, a slow-mo video of you jumping over that ditch?
Yes, I saw it before I came over here today.
Do you have any official comments about it?
I look fantastic.
A lot of people love it, dude. A lot of people are into it. Do you want to tell us a little bit about your strategy while jumping over this?
Well, my first strategy was watching you, yes, so I could learn from your mistakes. And I shorted it barely.
I put a foot in the water.
Yeah, there was a foot in the water.
If you guys haven't seen this, you got to go to my Instagram, BennyB301. I took a slow-mo video of Phil leaping majestically in his new Schnee's boots, which we'll get to.
Yes.
Over this ditch that had filled with some runoff, so it's full of water. And at first, Phil didn't know if he could make it over the ditch. And I said, well, let me jump over first and then film you in slow-mo for posting online later. Yep. So that's what we did. And it's pretty majestic. One guy said, it's like watching poetry. Such grace.
I can't disagree.
How are your ACLs feeling? Somebody wants to know.
My legs feel great. to show you how not in shape I am. I think I actually overextended my arm. So my arm was sore for a half hour after I made that jump somehow. Don't know how.
Okay.
But that's how my body works.
All right. Well, all the highlights from the hunt are going to be on my Instagram. As you listen to this, they'll be there. BennyOB301 on Instagram. So you can see some of the visual highlights. But we have the audio highlights of this hunt. And let me just tell you, a lot of stuff happened. A lot of things have happened. And we're going to lay them out over the next two episodes, the final two episodes of THC. And I can't wait for you to see how it ends. Okay, Phil, you ready to go?
Let's do it.
Here we go. Now play some sort of awesome intro music right here.
I believe in the turkey in me. I believe in the turkey in me.
So we struck out. First thing we had to do was we had to strike out to what we'll call sight in the shotgun, to pattern the shotgun, the Weatherby 18i that we had selected for Phil for his first hunt. We went out to some local public land to sight in the shotgun. Now, what happened on the way there is, I think, emblematic of this entire story. We didn't really get this on video or audio. But we're driving up a gravel road to this kind of what we'll call a public land shooting range close to my domicile here. And we're driving past a set of homes. And there's kind of a rancher-style home tucked in this little, the bosom of this little ridge.
Yeah.
And in the yard is many things. Many things are there. Rusty farm implements.
Uh-huh.
There was chickens, a few chickens.
Yeah, it was not unlike someplace a hobbit would live.
Yeah.
It was tucked into a hillside.
It really was,
With a bunch of just animals and random stuff scattered about.
Gentle smoke coming from the chimney.
Uh-huh.
And there in the yard was a turkey.
First turkey sighting as a part of Phil's first hunt. Hashtag
Phil's first bird. The first turkey we saw was really emblematic of the rest of our journey. Let me try to describe this turkey to you, Phil, and you help me out here if I'm getting this wrong. This turkey, first picture some sort of goblin from the depths of Hades, and then a turkey. And then mix those two things together, and that's what you get. This turkey could barely walk. It had maybe six or seven of its tail feathers. It was shaking uncontrollably. Its head was like the size of a cantaloupe, and it was just kind of wandering around this yard like a zombie.
Mm-hmm. It was walking as if it were bow-legged somehow, but it wasn't bow-legged, but it was walking like that.
It could barely, yes. If I had just punted it in the cloaca, it looked like it had just, it was in massive amounts of pain. It had like gyrating wing feathers, like a palsy of some kind.
Yeah, I'd like to think this turkey had seen better days earlier in its life. I hope so.
I hope it did. Because it was infirmed in a way that I've never seen any wild creature in my life, but it was almost like a sign that this was going to be weird, that this tale, this coming of age tale, was just going to be strange, and there's not a whole lot we can do about it. I've never seen a turkey like that. I got out my call, I hit the diaphragm a few times, and it let out this sad, dust-filled gobble that could only be described as depressing. You could barely hear it. And it was only 10 yards away from the truck.
Mm-hmm.
So wherever that turkey is today, and it's probably right under that same tree, it is now the mascot for this whole two-episode run.
Okay.
Sad as a mascot, though it may be, you know, RIP that turkey because it's going to die soon. I mean, it's probably from natural causes or unnatural causes. I was looking around for like a power plant, a nuclear power plant.
Sure, like some neon ooze was coming out of a pipe and it was, the turkey was eating it.
Yeah, yeah, I thought, is this thing wearing an eye patch? Like, has it been shanked by one of these other turkeys? I'll never forget it as long as I live. When I close my eyes just now, I can see it. I can see its face staring into my face. So anyway, I don't even think it had a beard. It was just grotesque. So write into thc@themeateater.com and name that turkey. Skippy Mick, no beard. Whatever you want to name that turkey, but he will be the mascot. For the rest, we'll go back and give video because he couldn't go far, like physically.
Oh, sure. He's there. He's got to be.
Do you think he roosts in it? He can't fly up in a tree. No. He probably just lays down on the ground when he goes to sleep. Just lays on the ground. So anyway, that's kind of my first and most searing memory from our journey, Phil.
Yeah.
Was that it was an omen from the turkey gods to watch the fuck out. Shit was about to get Western, okay? And what happened after that was completely unbelievable. No one would believe it, but you're about to hear it. So we move past this mutant turkey and shocked in awe, you know, kind of Twitter-pated a little bit. And we move up to the shooting range. And the shooting range portion of this certainly was all about education, right, Phil?
Yeah. I mean, I had never fired a shotgun before.
Yes.
So this was it.
So we get out there and we are preparing, and I need to go through what the gun is, what it does. Imagine you're 32, 3?
My age?
Yeah, 30.
I am 30.
30.
Yeah.
Okay, I got it right on the first try. 30.
Yep, exactly.
You're 30. You're a 30-year-old man. You've done a lot of things in your life, but you've never shot a shotgun. You never pulled the trigger on the shotgun.
No. I got very into airsoft in high school. That's as far as I got.
I met, not yesterday, or well, yesterday, a couple of days ago, I met a fella that had never tried pineapple.
Mm,
28 years old, never had pineapple. So watch this human, this full-grown adult human, eat this pineapple. It was amazing. So this is a lot of what it was like for Phil. And so we get out there and I want to say hilarity ensues, but it was pretty normal. And so here's me teaching Phil a little bit about the shotgun. Okay, Phil, are you ready, sir?
Yes. I've had my iced coffee.
Yep, of course.
You've had your yerba mate.
This is this is what most people at the range do. They talk about their caffeinated beverages.
Yeah.
Anything you want, any questions before I go through the shotgun and the task here?
Not yet. No, I'm ready to learn. I have some more turkey specific questions for later, but right now I think I just need to like hold a gun in my hand probably.
All right, well, here's the gun. Here, so this is a Weatherby 18i. It's a semi-automatic shotgun.
We got to be honest. It was very windy.
So we went into my truck, and I didn't actually have the shotgun.
No.
I was miming the whole time. So just let's just keep going. It was sad.
This thing, this big piece in the back is the whole thing is the stock.
Yes.
The big thing in the back is the butt stock.
Now that you've told them, this is silly.
That's the whole point. The butt of the gun. Mm-hmm. And there's a recoil pad on that that helps to cushion that recoil that you're going to feel from the
Let me stop again. I'm trying to be the expert of experts here. I'm super worried that people will think that I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, so you're going over every little part of the gun.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think I was even reading off something on my phone.
The shot when you pull the trigger. So there's the trigger guard. Put your finger right there. You see that?
Hey, there's the nothing's happening.
Guarding the trigger.
It's totally
doing
fake.
A good job.
Never put your finger on the trigger and even inside that trigger guard until we're ready to go.
Nope. Yep.
All right.
For sure.
And then when here's the safety, so you can push it back and forth and see as the action is open, you can see that there's no round, so you can push that back and forth and see safety. Was when the red indicator is showing, and on safe is when the red indicator is not showing. And here at the range, we won't do this in the field, but here in the range, when that safety clicks off, you just say fire in the hole, which means I'm preparing to shoot, which lets me know that you're getting ready to send some shot down.
So now you're educated, Phil.
Yes.
You're educated.
I was holding the gun in my hand,
yeah,
inspecting all the parts you were showing me.
It was kind of like an air gun. It's made of air.
There you go.
But we did. We actually did later than, you know, inspect. It's the magic of audio here. We're just letting you in to the creative work that goes into a show like this.
Yeah, you should be grateful that Ben was so honest with you.
Yeah,
He's really opening up.
Yeah,
nuance. In these last episodes.
And then, you know, we did other stuff.
Okay, it's getting a little windy out here. We're on America's public lands. I always say America's public lands. Like they'd be somewhere else. I'm going to show you what you're doing here, Phil. You're going to be shooting these federal TSS loads, these heavyweight TSS.
Sponsor alert.
Tungsten Super Shot. These are 3-inch shells. They have 9 shot, and it's 1 3/4 ounce shot inside of there. So we're going to put these babies right in here. And then when we hit this button, it's going to be chambered, right? We're going to be ready to fire.
Okay.
Safety there, like I showed you. And then this is the magazine where you'll be able to insert the extra shells which will be cycled through when you pull the trigger.
I'm really doing a great job.
Semi-automatic. Yeah. Okay?
Got it.
Now, on to the next thing we recorded. All right. Eyes and ears.
Yeah. Safety. See, we're doing it right.
Yep.
We made sure to eyes
and
ears.
All right, this turkey is probably about, how far do you think that turkey is? Probably about 15 yards, this turkey. That's a turkey's head. And you're going to put the bead. Look down the barrel here real quick. You're going to put that bead. See the rib of the shotgun here?
Yep.
You're going to embed that bead down in the rib so you just see like a half moon. Mm-hmm. And that bead is going to go right on the turkey's major caruncles or right in the middle of its neck there. As you can see, there's a bullseye on the target. And so you're going to place that bead right on top of that. All right. And then you're going to shoot him in the face.
Good.
That's how it's going to go. Okay. Commentary, Philip.
No, it's a lovely day. Couldn't ask for better weather, better situation. I'm excited.
Okay. We're going to run through this once. Let's let you feel it and then get your reaction. And then we'll start to look at accuracy and kind of play a little bit around what we need to do in the field.
You were thrilled at this point, Phil.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm going to be honest. I was very much out of my element. So, you know, I didn't really know what to expect. I was just trying to take in what you were telling me.
Yeah, and, I mean, I think in all seriousness, I mean, I think being a mentor is about that feeling out process. Of course, we know each other from sitting around in the studio a lot of times. But those of you that are out there mentoring folks, you may not know them or you may know them from other you know, interactions. You may know him professionally. You may know him from work. You may know him from church. You may know him from, who knows? You know him from the corner store. You don't know. It's this, going to the range with someone, one, is a good way to kind of set the precedent for how you're going to communicate. You know, whether you trust that person, whether you're really going to take on the mentor role as like, I'll handle the firearms, I'll make sure we're safe, or you're going to cede some trust over to that person that you're working with. And these early interactions are a way to kind of get to know each other, but also to set a cadence, because you have to do this successfully, to mentor someone successfully, you have to be able to communicate with them and understand them, and they have to understand you. There's a lot of, you know, even nonverbal communication in the woods, a lot of whispering, a lot of fast action. And so this is, to me, is like a good way to say, like, this is how we're going to communicate to each other. This is how we're going to be safe. This is setting a precedent for when we're out there, making sure we understand, you know, kind of the step-by-step process of how we're going to handle some of these more intricate actions out there in the field. So that's what's going through my mind, you know, to see how comfortable you are. I think immediately you were pretty comfortable with the weapon. Like, it wasn't something scary, or you didn't feel like you were nervous. You were nervous. You wanted to be accurate. You wanted to do it right. But I don't think you were nervous at the idea of felt recoil, were you?
No. I mean, I think you'll hear, after you kind of gave me the go-ahead to fire, there was a long gap. I was really trying to, like, remember all the things you told me, like, 3 points of contact, like, where's the sight pointing, like, am I level enough, like, am I holding the gun too close to my body, am I holding it too tight, or am I holding it too loosely, like, am I leaning too far back, too far forward, and like, all that kind of stuff. I was trying to process, like, fire on the exhale, just like all that stuff. And so, like, I think there was some trepidation there, but I was never like uncomfortable or nervous, like, in that way. No.
So here we go. All right. We got Phil all figured out here. He's up. We're using a hydro sled and a Caldwell shooting table out here in the middle of this kind of really flat, arid public land piece. So you're all set up there, Phil. Does that feel pretty comfortable?
It does, yes. We finagled it, and now I'm feeling pretty good.
Okay, I forgot the target stand, so we're using a piece of wood and a bungee cord.
Yeah.
Much like is tradition in the turkey hunting space. Okay, I'm going to load this up for you, Phil. As soon as this action closes, it's going to be ready to fire. Now, when you're ready to shoot, all you got to do is push that safety, and then when you're ready to fire, put your finger inside the trigger guard and just tell me, you know, ready to go.
You know, got it.
Okay.
Great sound.
Right. Yeah, that is.
Good sound.
So here's the moment we'll pause. It, like,
it's not like a bad
questions.
Thing that I'm going to have my hand under the magazine, like,
no, you're
opening
fine.
The
you're fine.
Loader there.
Just the further up on the fore end you can get it, the better. If you hold it right here, you'll be just fine. And this is very natural. Like, what's happening here? You're trying to get comfortable. I think, and you tell me if I'm wrong, immediately when I load a shot shell and I say it's loaded, it's ready to go, like your mood changes a little bit. I mean, like, you're understanding now.
Oh, for sure.
A big loud thing could happen at any time.
Yeah, well, even just looking at the trigger and the trigger guard, how close the trigger is to the back of that trigger guard area, where I was like, oh, like, this is like a hairpin. Like, you barely have to squeeze for it to go off. So it's, you know, like I told you, I didn't grow up with guns, so all this stuff, you know, being handed a shotgun when you're 30, it carries a little bit more weight and, like,
certainly,
context as an adult, more than it would if you were, you know, 8 years old. So, like, it just kind of, you know, I was trying to be extra careful.
Yeah, I mean, all the time we've talked about this and thought about this, and we talk about mentoring a lot on the show, and we've kind of thought through what this would be, but this is one of the main points to remember if you are mentoring an emergent hunter, is as a child, you're pretty locked in on whoever is mentoring you, whether it's your dad. You generally have a relationship with that person, right? Uncle, father, friend, whatever. But you don't have a general, like, you have no general knowledge of the social and cultural impacts of firearms, right? You also just don't have general knowledge on ways people might die. Right, just don't sit around reading about gun accidents or reading about mass shootings. And so I know that those things are baked in, and I could tell, and I think this is very normal, that, like, when the finality of that shot shell in the chamber and me saying, like, it's on you now, be safe, do this right, so you're immediately, like, there's a question. Okay, what do I do? Where do I go? Elbows, hands, cheek. Where does this all go? You know, and that's pretty natural, right?
Yeah.
I think so. So here we go. Yeah, just don't get your... This action is going to come back and forward, and this magazine will work in that action, will work that next round into the chamber.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're there, you're just fine.
Okay.
And the goal here with this first shot was just to get, just to understand how everything works.
Mm-hmm.
No expectation, no nothing.
Tell me when you're ready, just say fire in the hole.
Okay. Now we got a
rancher.
Oh, yes.
I also didn't want to shoot the gun whenever anyone was driving by.
Yeah. It was totally fine. The road was completely in a very safe zone.
Yeah, yeah.
But you didn't want to.
It was make. I don't know if self-conscious is the word, but something about it just made me slightly uncomfortable.
Here we go. See him.
Say when.
Driving
okay,
out of the
fire
distance.
In the hole.
Okay. Go ahead and get set up on it. Get that cheek on the weld. Don't put that finger near the trigger until you're set up and firm. Yeah. Make sure this is firm against your shoulder. Okay, you're good. Go ahead and place that finger on the trigger and pull slowly back towards you.
It's a lot of power.
It is. You killed that turkey. All right.
We're done. I did it.
Man. He didn't make it. Well done. What do you think there, Philly engineer?
That was exciting. Yeah.
What a stupid answer.
I don't have a whole lot of words right now, but yeah.
There it is.
It was exciting.
A lot of pressure on you to say poignant things.
Yeah, I got to say, I did not like you running up to me with a microphone as soon as I had shot the gun.
For the first time. I did that every time you shot, I think.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Probably. We won't bore you with the rest of the details, but suffice to say, like, we'll talk through a little bit of what happened, Phil. That first shot would have been every shot. I think you shot about five times, seven times.
I think it was
actually.
Seven
times total.
Yeah, you shot one.
I shot one just to see. Everything was a little bit low.
Yeah.
A little bit to the left. I think the first three or four shots you would have killed the turkey, but you know, to understand, you know, we had about an 18-yard target, again, piece of wood, bungee cord. It was kind of on the ground. We started you on a Caldwell shooting bench, a portable shooting bench that I have, and then a hydro sled, which is like a lead sled. It's a big shooting rest. So we started you there first, just so you could understand the mechanics of the situation and kind of mentally understand what's going to happen, just so we all had that mutual understanding. And then we did that a couple of times, took that away, brought in a Caldwell shooting bag, just so now you could feel the shotgun directly on your shoulder. We could talk about fit. We could talk about points of contact. We could talk about, you know, really, as I think you could talk about this a little bit, what came to, I think, really help you was like, control the shotgun. Don't let the shotgun control you. Bear down.
Mm-hmm.
Like, make sure you're on top of the gun. Don't, you know, don't let it, don't let it buck. I guess would be a good way to say it. So talk people through how that progression went, because we went from just trying to understand to just trying to control the shotgun, but then trying to shoot for accuracy. Then we sat you up against a gate, you know, just like you would be up against a tree in a field and did some more shooting. So talk people through how that all in your mind went.
Yeah, I mean, I felt like my aim, I mean, behind the gun, I felt like I was aiming properly.
Yeah.
And I was pretty consistent with where the shots were ending up, but it wasn't where I wanted them to end up. It was always just slightly low and slightly to the left. Yeah. And so then even when I tried to kind of compensate for that, which I don't know if was the right thing to do, it was still ending up kind of low and to the left. So I think and then you came in and were like, well, I specifically doing something. I think you were telling me that I maybe was kind of,
you were jumping the trigger a little bit, which is,
yeah,
completely natural.
Mm-hmm.
Which jumping the trigger just means, you know, jerking it, pulling fast, not smoothly pulling through, right? So as you jerk the trigger, that's going to create, you know, really a different kind of action. And so I just talked about, let's focus on other things, right? Because there's a level at which when you're instructing someone on something like this, you can get in their heads if you give them too much instruction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you give them too many things to think about, and then
And
so I could just, to me, it was like, okay, let's, because we talked about, you know, getting that, taking a breath in, and then as you let that breath out, just slowly pulling that trigger and the surprise shot, you know, we talked about that. But as I was watching, I'm like, well, I think if I just, let's just get that gun seated correctly in your shoulder and just control that thing. They just know that you're not, you know, you're not waiting for the recoil, not worried about the trigger, you're just worried about controlling that shotgun. And then once we kind of got there, then you were right on. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that was just, you know, openly through that process, just watching and trying to understand. And there's no one way to do that. You just got to, it's interpersonal. You just got to figure it out together. And again, if you're teaching somebody how to go hunt for the first time, especially if they're an adult, this is going to happen. You have to like work with each other, work as a team. It's not boss employee. It's two people trying to figure something out together. That's really what this is.
Hey everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right. Join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meat Eater Live, headed back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, camp stove, and campfire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th, the Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25th, the Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27th, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29th, the Union in Salt Lake City. April 30th, the Egyptian in Boise. May 1st, the Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2, the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon. And May 5, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at themeateater.com. Hope to see you at the show.
I was happy by the end of the thing, and we got to go drive out. We got to drive by the mutant turkey on the way back out.
That's right. So say goodbye.
Say goodbye. Goodbye, mutant turkey. Goodbye forever. So when we were driving out past the mutant turkey, we did a little recording just to talk about in the moment. So let's see what you said in reflection.
This is good because I do not remember anything that I
said. That's what I'm saying, man. I don't remember either. So it's good. It's like this is a fun way to play it out for me and you. Maybe it's not good for the audience, but for us it's fun.
Okay, Phil.
Yeah.
All right. The last shot, you blew the turkey's head off. Feeling good about that?
Yes. It was a good note to go out on. My best shot was my last shot. Just got to remember to kind of, you were telling me to bear down a little bit, keep that gun tight to my shoulder, and aim a little higher, I guess, was kind of what I did on that last shot.
Yes. So. Well, I mean, that's it, man. That's why you come out here, so you can learn a little bit and experience it. And if you, all but one of your shots, you would have killed a turkey. So for your first time really doing this, that's like I said, I'm not worried at all. I have no concerns about the turkeys and what they'll do after Phil the Engineer pulls the trigger.
Sure, except the real ones will be, like, presumably walking around and moving. So that'll be another wrinkle. But I think I'm ready.
I think you're ready too.
Okay.
Well, what questions do you have about actual turkey hunting itself? We've kind of gone over it on the show a bunch of times, but do you have any questions about like the scenario for the morning?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, so we're going to set up decoys, you said, about 20-ish yards away.
Yeah.
Is there a specific moment that the turkey, will the turkey be doing something specific when it's strutting or trying, checking out the decoys? Am I waiting for it to kind of stop and you know, plant for a sec before I take the shot? I guess what's the opportune moment to actually take the shot other than having a clear sight line and you know, knowing the target and everything?
Yeah, so it all depends on how it happens. For your first turkey hunt, if it doesn't go the way we want it to go, we're just not going to shoot. Like that, you know, if he comes in and gets nervous and starts running around in circles and looks like starts putting and looks like he wants to roll out, we're just going to let him go. Yep. We're not going to rush anything. We're not going to be unethical. We're not going to force a shot if we don't need to. So the perfect scenario is when we set these decoys up, we're going to set them up in such a way that he has to come where we'll set up. I know this little meadow where we're going to go. We're going to set up the decoys where he basically, in almost all scenarios, probably 9 out of the 10 scenarios where a turkey might approach, he's going to have to come past us to get to the decoys. Okay. And for a myriad of reasons, but really because I want him to be focused on the decoys and walk and looking towards the decoys, and we're not on the other side of those decoys, right? So we're going to set up so he has to come past us. So generally, once a full strut turkey or a gobbler or, you know, any turkey that's interested in decoys, once they get full lock in on a decoy, they want to come. And I'm not going to say you can't do anything, but you can move around a little bit. You can adjust a little bit. I mean, people, you know, in those situations, draw a bow. You know, so have a full draw on a bow. That's a lot of motion that you won't need to have. So when that turkey comes in, you're going to be set up already like we just were. You'll be sitting on against a tree. You'll have 3 points of contact. You'll be ready to go. You'll be putting that sight picture in your mind and getting ready. So literally just click the safety off, and when I tell you to shoot, you let it go. What you're looking for turkey-wise, there's a couple things we can do. If he's in full strut, his feathers kind of fluff up, right? His body kind of blows up. He lifts his wings. His tail fan is kind of up in the air. Mm-hmm. And his head is tucked into his body, right? Yeah. And so it's not a full, you know, that target we were just shooting at is just a full turkey's head, and that's it.
Yep.
In that case, when his head is tucked into his body, certainly I've shot turkeys like that. What I would like to do is I'll probably throw out a few clucks or just like one noise to get him to poke his head up, and then I'll tell you to kill him.
Right? Got it.
So when he puts his head up to look around like, what was that? Then you have a full clear picture of that turkey and hopefully a silhouetted head just like you had in that target. And so that's what we're looking for. Now, if we don't get that, if he's coming to the decoys, he sees something weird and he skirts us and he's around at like 30 or 40 yards and he just won't come in, we can talk about it at that point. I'll say, are you comfortable? 30 yards, I think you can kill him. Yeah. Like, are you comfortable? And the first time we go out, like, err on the side of caution, err on the side of thinking it through. And I will certainly tell you when I think that you are good to go. That doesn't necessarily mean you have to follow that order. Like, you can judge it for yourself. But I'll let you know when I think you're good to go.
Okay.
But if the turkey is in the decoys, if he is making contact with the decoys, if he's doing a dance with where we set our decoys up, he'll be in killable range for your shotgun. So that's really, really what the consideration is in terms of effective range and what we really want to see.
We're dry. Oh, there he is.
There he is. Is he there?
He's on the side of the house.
Oh, Lord.
Well, oh, there's two of them. And some chickens.
Those are farm turkeys. I don't even understand what to do with this turkey. That is the craziest looking turkey that I've ever seen, dude.
It's like, oh man.
That is the wildest. I gotta get my phone out and film this turkey. I don't even know what to say about it. It's like
mutant turkey.
See it though.
Yeah.
All right, that's it. That's wild. Oh, mutant turkey.
Yeah.
You once were, but. Again, I hope everybody's tracking here. I know these are the essential parts, you know, of mentoring someone. These are not the exciting parts, but they're the essential parts of, like I said, getting to know someone, having them getting to know you, you know, articulating yourself in a way that they can understand. And also, hopefully, Phil, I made you feel like you could ask questions and there was no dumb question. Hopefully.
Yeah, no, and one thing you just said a few minutes ago is about how you don't want to try to overload someone with information. I never got that at all. You kind of just like let me feel it out, threw in a tip here and there, but it was never sort of like, do this. Because yeah. if you had done that, I would have kind of probably locked shut down a little bit and been too worried about screwing up. So, yeah.
So now we're headed out hunting the next day to a spot that I'd been and never killed a turkey. Talked it up a lot. This was it. This was the moment that all of my talking and just grandeur about turkey hunting was going to come to fruition. There was going to be gobbles everywhere. It would be an early morning, just crisp morning, birds everywhere. You'd get to see the natural world come to life in the springtime. You get to just feel the energy of the turkey woods. And this was in my mind what was going to happen, and that we were going to have this indoctrination into this cult-like mentality. Phil was finally going to be a part of the 10th Legion.
Okay, Phil. What do you think, buddy?
It's not too cold, which is great.
That's good commentary.
It was great.
That's my first thought.
It's warm in Montana.
Yeah.
That's a good thing. Well, we're going right over here.
Okay.
There's a river, which will go unnamed, that goes obviously right here.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a bunch of good roosting trees right on the river. The situation is, we got to go about a quarter of a mile to get to where I think they'll be and listen for them to be gobbling in the tree. The big problem here is they'll be in a tree 90% of the time on private land.
Yeah.
So we gotta sound like a turkey and have big plastic things that look like turkeys and get them to come to us on the public, which is pretty common, this type of hunting. So it's not academic. I've never killed a turkey in here before, but I've been on them every single time I've been here. So,
okay, we'll stop there. That's interesting commentary by me. We'll see what happens. Phil, I will give you a compliment. Oh, okay, you ready?
Thanks, man.
You were a very punctual turkey hunter. Like, you don't know how annoying it is for someone not to be punctual in fly down situations.
Okay, good.
You were flawless the entire time. You were on point. You were very willing. You were excitable. I feel like your number was pretty high by the time that, like, we were talking strategy here at the truck. Was it high?
Yeah, for sure. Mainly because I was just thrilled. I was. Springtime in Montana can be a fickle bastard.
It can be a bitch.
There can be a foot of snow. It can be pouring rain. It could be lovely. It could be very windy, which it usually is.
Yes.
But that first morning was just, it was perfect.
It was perfect.
And so I was just in a great, you know, I set my alarm, woke up. I was ready to go. And then when I stepped out of my car in that lot we were in, it just felt, I was looking forward to it. I was ready for the day.
It felt good.
Yeah.
I had built it up in my own mind as well. And it felt good. I was ready for that first gobble. I was ready to, like, put my arm in the air in celebration the first time we heard a gobble.
Mm-hmm.
And to know where these turkeys are, make a plan, and show you kind of at least the interaction, right? The game of cat and mouse.
Yeah.
Right? We were going to have a nemesis turkey by the end of the day, I thought. And again, a lot of buildup here. A lot of pressure, a lot of buildup, a lot of pressure on me to create something here, to show Phil exactly what hunting is and what it's like, and I put a lot of pressure on myself. So a lot of things happen, you know, in hunting. We're heading out, and then my fatherly notion is to make sure that I have everything first, and then to make sure Phil has everything he needs. We got decoys, we got shotgun, we got calls, we got everything we need. And then I checked one last thing.
Phil forgot his license in the truck. We're going back. We only got 50 yards from
Okay. He forgot his license. Fine. It happens to the best of us. It was where? It was in your backpack?
Yeah. It was in my backpack. I didn't, I remembered to grab it in the morning.
Yeah.
That was good, right?
Yes. Big lesson. Also, to go back a couple steps, Phil, when buying his license, this is something everybody should know. Like, in the state of Montana, you can print out your license or they'll mail you the carcass tags. There's an actual license itself and then a carcass tag, which when you fill your tag, you notch it and that mm-hmm. becomes the thing you attach to the carcass. Hence the term carcass tag. Phil got his license the night before the hunt, which is always what I see most commonly people tend to do when it is over the counter. He gets his license online, and then at the end, what happens, Phil? You get Twitter pated, you get confused, you're excited.
Ask you a bunch of questions. One of the questions at the bottom was, because I had already printed my license.
Yes.
And then there was one more step where it was like, would you like to print your carcass tags now or have FWP mail them to you? And just, I obviously, if I had spent 10 seconds thinking about it, I would have thought, well, I'm going hunting tomorrow. I'm going to need these carcass tags as soon as possible. I checkmarked, just mail them to me. I was not thinking. And then as soon as, like, 5 minutes later, I had one of those moments to just like something went off in the back of my head, like, oh, maybe I should call Ben and see if this is a problem.
I was like, that's going to be a problem. You're going to need those.
But luckily, Ben made some phone calls. I was able to go to the local Sportsman's Warehouse, and they could not have been lovelier.
They were very lovely to me on the phone. I called them. I said, I have this fellow. And they said, is it a boy? I said, no, it's a man.
It's a fellow.
It's a fellow man.
Yes.
She said, is this a child? I said, no, it's a man. It's his first hunt, and he needs a license. So they took care of you. And then now we resume our adventure.
The one thing about hunting, at least in my case, it's really about forgetting things and then remembering them, or losing things and then finding them. Uh-huh. We're wearing thousands of dollars of gear.
Sponsor.
And obviously we need that, or we wouldn't be able to fool this turkey we're about to go find.
Yep. See, that's sage advice, Phil. You remember that for next time. So off we go. The idea was to hit up a little clearing, a little pocket amidst the brush in this riparian zone, and listen and glass. We were pretty early again. We were probably 30, 45 minutes before fly down. So we had plenty of time, and that was by design. We had plenty of time to get in there, hear the turkeys, get set up, do whatever we needed to do to draw them for what I thought would be from private onto public. Like, this is the game I'm pretty sure we're going to play. And then just all hell broke loose. See? Amazing. You guys hear any gobbles?
Well, Phil, we've heard a lot of birds this morning, your first morning turkey hunting.
Yes.
But no turkeys, right?
As far as I know, no. And by as far as I know, I mean I ask you and you say no.
Yeah, we're standing in a spot where I've never shot a turkey in here, but I've hunted it. This is about my sixth or seventh time being in here hunting, I think. And I've never not heard a turkey on the roost. And it is just about fly down here in another 5 minutes or so. And we've not heard a peep from a turkey. It's very demoralizing. Because it's kind of like, wow, you're going to go to this spot where there's turkeys in there. As a turkey hunter, you have certain spots, Phil, where you're basically like, yep, at least we're going to get some action there.
Well, Phil,
this is when you started to spiral.
I spiraled so quickly. It wasn't even fly down yet, and I was spiraled. I was gone.
Yeah, at this point, I was not as bummed out as you, because I think you had obviously had more expectations than I did. But I was expecting to hear
a turkey. We heard no turkeys.
None.
Not a turkey.
No.
Knowing that there were turkeys there. Like the way that this sets up, their turkeys either fly across a river to go, which they will do, but I know there's turkeys here. They're just not gobbling. And as we said earlier, it's a fine morning. There's no excuses.
Lovely.
Lovely morning. No wind, little to no wind. Probably 48 to 50 degrees right around fly down. And this is like prime time. We have done everything right. You are punctual. We've trained. We've got the shotgun. We've talked about the scenarios. We've got our decoys. We've got thousands of dollars of gear. And here we are on the precipice of greatness. And the turkeys aren't gobbling.
Nope.
There's nothing that we can do to make them gobble. Did I make noises at them, Phil?
Oh, yeah. All kinds.
All kinds of noises.
Listen, and I've been lucky enough to have been exposed to and meet all kinds of incredible turkey callers.
Preston Pittman. Clay Newcomb. Jan Spitalis.
I saw a bunch at NWTF. There was a GD competition.
A competition.
I saw people there.
A competition.
You sounded great. You were calling. You're doing all kinds of clucks. You broke out the crow call, trying to get him to shot gobble.
I was doing some owl hoots.
Nothing
happened on the first Phil's first day of training. Not like, oh, did you? What of it? It's far away. Nothing. Not a single one. Nothing. And there, you know, what were we gonna do? There was nothing we could do It was pure, we've been hunting for 48 minutes, and it was pure desperation at that point. I thought my entire life to that point was worthless, and that these 2 years of hunting, of knowing Phil and hunting and convincing him to go hunting was going to be in vain.
Mm-hmm.
Tune in next time to hear what happened in part two of the coming of age tale of Phil T. Engineer. Any parting shots, Phil, before we head to the final episode? Wow. Cliffhanger.
Wow. I just want to ask you how this feels. You're setting up the final episode of The Hunting Collective.
Nah, fucking with the listeners a little bit. We can tell the whole story if we wanted to, but we're not going to tell you the whole story. It's a cliffhanger. Come on, we didn't hear any turkeys the first morning. Eventually, we heard turkeys, I can tell you that.
Ooh, whoa.
Find out next time on The Hunting Collective. Say bye, Phil.
Goodbye.
Clean your gun and tune your bow. We're The Hunting Collective Show. Calling hunters new and old. The Hunting Collective Show. Working, picking, shovel, or working, pen in hand. We congregate now as lovers of the land. Mindful and we're focused. We're just living for the search. Dreaming of a fire and a salty Gilbert. But we ain't coming back till it's cold and late. We're taking it slow so we can shoot straight. Clean your gun and tune your bow. We're The Hunting Collective Show. Calling hunters new and old. Ain't no cold time told.
Hey, we're going to take a little break here and talk about Interstate batteries. Now, if you're like me, enjoying the great outdoors, you need gear that is as reliable as it gets. That's why I power my adventures with Interstate batteries. I use Interstate batteries in my boats. I use Interstate batteries in my camper. Great for your truck, too. From Alaska to Montana, they're outrageously dependable. Battery is essential. With over 150,000 dealer locations, finding one is easy. For all your vehicles, land or sea, choose Interstate. Head to interstatebatteries.com and find your power today. Hey, everybody, listen up. I got mega huge news. Meat Eater Live is heading back out on the road. That's right. Join me and the crew. Clay Newcomb, Cal, Yanni, Spencer's going to be there. Phil the Engineer is going to be there. Meat Eater Live, headed back out. Now, when you get every ticket, okay, every ticket you buy, you get a signed copy of our new Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook. This tour is celebrating the release of the book. Buy a ticket, get a signed copy, Meat Eater Outdoor Cookbook, wild game recipes for the grill, smoker, camp stove, and campfire, which I'll point out is a $38 value. Here's where we're going to go. April 23rd, the Mesa Arts Center in Mesa, Arizona. April 24th, the Balboa Theater in San Diego. April 25th, the Grove in Anaheim, California. April 27th, the Crest Theater in Sacramento. April 29, the Union in Salt Lake City. April 30, the Egyptian in Boise. May 1, the Wilma Theater in Missoula. May 2, the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane, Washington. May 4, Revolution Hall in Portland, Oregon. And May 5, the last day of the tour, Pantages Theater in Tacoma, Washington. For tickets and more information, visit the events page at the Meat Eater.com. Hope to see you at the show.